we're hooked up to their machines, where reality is such a bitter pill. Here in the Matrix, people talk about being aware. They'll critique you for dropping some litter or for not washing your hair. And if you talk of launching a revolution, they'll say that you should be killed. You gotta work within the system, they'll say. Yes, reality is such a bitter pill. Here in the Matrix, they say the problems that exist can all be solved by means provided if we politely persist. Work in your offices, vote in your booths. For the men on the hill, just ignore your nightmares about those creatures. Because reality is such a bitter pill. Yes, reality is such a bitter pill.
Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, it's easy to forget almost 3 years along. There was a time before the Russia-Ukraine war, but make no error, those weren't halcyon days. The absence of war did not make a peace. Instead, it was the period of war's long slogging preparation when falsity and treachery conspired to ready the conditions for the destruction of a nation. And that conspiracy continues. John Helmer is a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has, as well as serving as advisor to governments at the highest levels, too, been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among his many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, the lately released autobiography Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes, Skripal in Prison, the first and perhaps only book to follow the Skripal saga from its beginnings, and now its freshly released sequel, Long Live Novichok, the British poison that fooled the world. Welcome back to the program, John.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
Well, it's always my pleasure, of course, and congratulations on the book, Long Live Novichok. Can we start, John, with why Canadians so far away from the heart of this story should care now and so many years after the fact?
The answer is that this, the Skripal case, the Novichok allegation, the allegation that Russia went to war on British territory with a poison, that's a vital stage in the launch of the European NATO Anglo-American war to destroy Russia. The process began in February 2014 when the Yanukovych regime, presidency of the Ukraine, was overthrown and replaced by a regime that the US and the NATO allies have been running ever since as a warfare machine against Russia. The second episode was when that warfare machine ran into trouble, you know, battlefield trouble in the east, when it was unable to suppress the rising of the Donbas regions, particularly Lugansk and Donetsk. The Ukrainian-American plan was to shoot down MH17, the Malaysian Airlines flight, and create a provocation and a reason for NATO troops to intervene on the ground. That was prepared in advance and was to have involved Dutch and Australian forces, believe it or not, and it was vetoed by the Germans. That occurred in July 2017. In March 4, 2018, in Salisbury, south central England, the allegation is that Sergei Skripal, defector, a Russian double agent, a spy for the British inside Russian military intelligence, who'd been swapped for the release of Russians in U.S. prisons, and his daughter, Yulia Skripal, were attacked by a poison, causing their collapse in the center of town and then hospitalized. They did not die. I believe Sergei Skripal has subsequently died. Yulia Skripal has been held incommunicado in prison by the British ever since and was not heard since a telephone call in 2020. So this Skripal affair, the Novichok affair, was the British contribution, a deception operation, a very effective deception operation to the extent it's believed, on the way to full economic sanctions against Russia and full diplomatic isolation, expulsion of diplomats, that sort of thing, on the road to the war, which eventually broke out in February 2022. So the staging of the plan of war by the US, the British, and the NATO allies required several steps to justify to public opinion and the media in these countries, in our countries, why the Russians deserved war, why President Putin was so evil as to be a legitimate target of Allied action, as it's turned out. And so here we are, 3 years into that war, which the US and the NATO allies have lost on the battlefield, so that the Ukraine will not exist ever again in the form in which that war began February 2022. The Novichok story is a part of the confidence that the Anglo-American media have held that Russia deserved to die because it attacked first. This is a complete lie, but what we learn from the Skripal affair, from the Novichok affair, and for its related inquest on hearings into the death of Dawn Sturgis, we'll get into the question of who she was. This entire affair, the story that I've just finished telling, shows that all global public opinion, certainly all NATO's, British and American, Canadian opinion, thinks that the Russians committed that Novichok crime. Subsequently, the Germans reinforced it with the theory that Alexei Navalny, the Russian oppositionist, had been poisoned by Novichok. That was a complete lie, but that's a relatively minor part of the Navalny story. So here we are today at the end of a complete show trial, a propaganda display by the British to prove how clever they are at deceiving the world on Russian intentions, Russian methods, Russian evils, etc., etc. This is a vital stage in the path to war. It's never been recognized to be what it is, and it's been, as a deception operation, very successful, because here I am, and I'm the only one explaining why, in forensic detail, the British story was preposterous from the beginning, and the hearings that ended in December last year, preposterous, illegal nonsense, defying all standards of British law, Canadian law, and US law in trying to prove what they can't prove. But in that process, a number of new bits of evidence and new clues have popped up, which show how bad, how preposterous, how false the entire British invention of the Skripal affair has been. I believe the evidence in the book, the evidence available publicly now, indicate that Sergei Skripal intended to and asked for and was planning to return to Moscow, but the British decided to get rid of him first. His real value was only as propaganda in Moscow. His real and that was significantly greater motive for the British to stop than his value in Salisbury was of value to the British. He was more valuable to the British as a victim of a Russian attack than he had value, politically speaking or militarily speaking, to anyone.
What value did the British hold in him when they traded him for the Russian counterparts in the spy swap? They must have thought he was worth something.
Clearly, they thought he was worth something. But the 10 so-called Russian sleeper agents were exchanged for, if I'm not mistaken, 4 Western agents in Russian prisons. I can't go through the terms of exchange. Those sorts of secret negotiations of exchange of spies is complicated, and it's impossible. It's not worth going into why some individuals were worth something more to one side or the other. What we're at is, why was Sergei Skripal attacked, as his own daughter has now testified they were attacked, not by a poison on the door handle from Russian agents, but by British agents attempting to foil an exfiltration. Let's bear in mind, he had no value. Sergei Skripal had no value to the Russians to warrant their attacking him. That was That's a preposterous claim for which the British have no evidence. And it's a claim they recited over and over during the 6 weeks of public hearings between October and December of last year. His value was only to the Russian side positively. If they'd been managed to exfiltrate him, he would have been paraded publicly, he would have written articles, he would have been interviewed on all the elaborate preparations the British were making at Porton Down to build chemical warfare as part of their war plan against Russia. So the motive for killing him was British. The method for killing him was a poison. The issue of where the attack, the crime scene occurred, and how the poison was delivered has been the argument from the beginning, March 4, 2018. And every time the British came up with a weapon and a crime scene, the evidence showed that there were no Russians there. What the Russians had done was to put in two decoys they knew the British were following. Those are the two chaps whose pictures of walking around Salisbury on the Saturday before the fateful day, March 4th, 2018, and then the Sunday, whose pictures have been widely published by the British. But there's no evidence they ever got near the so-called door handle of the house that was poisoned. The perps never got near the crime scene. That's a bit awkward. So the British have, over the period of time between the attack on Sergei Skripal and Yulia Skripal on March 4, and subsequently, they had to come up with a different version of how the weapon was delivered. And that involved the discovery of, alleged discovery of, a perfume bottle on the kitchen table, not very far away in a house in Amesbury, near Salisbury, in which Dawn Sturgis, an innocent bystander, was killed by smelling or spraying a perfume from this poison bottle onto her wrist. And then that meant that the corpse of Dawn Sturgis, who actually died in her apartment on June 30th, 2018, weeks after the Skripal attack, Dawn Sturgis' corpse was rolled in by the British government to expose the poison. And the poison was found 11 days after she died, after police and ambulance men had thoroughly searched the house and found all sorts of illegal drugs. We can go into the detail. The book's full of this forensic detail, but when you read slowly and accumulate the details, the Dawn Sturgis case was the attempt by the British to improve on the false story of what had happened to the Skripals.
Yeah, let's talk about that in a second. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with John Helmer. John's a journalist and author. He spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears and has served as a special advisor to governments at the highest levels, and been to a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism. Among his many book titles are The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, related clearly to this. His recently released autobiography, Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes, Skripal in Prison, and now the sequel to that book, Long Live Novichok, The British Poison That Fooled the World. Yeah, the other awkward aspect of this, John, was the fact that there were no bodies. The Skripals didn't die. This Novichok is being built up as this military-grade nerve agent, highly deadly in the most minute amounts, didn't kill them. And so is this the idea that Dawn Sturgis was a convenient body that was slotted into that position, or is there something more nefarious?
The British have used corpses before to run deception operations. The most famous of them is called Operation Mincemeat. There are books and movies about this. It happened in 1943 when a down-and-out homeless man, depressed, took rat poison, organophosphate poison like Novichok, to kill himself. Very painfully in London, and his body, his corpse, was prepared and dressed up by the British and then floated from a submarine offshore onto a beach in Spain so that the Germans would pick it up and believe him to have been a military courier with a briefcase full of plans, false plans, trying to fool the German high command as to the location and the timing of the anticipated British, American, and Allied invasion of Europe. That Operation Mincemeat fooled the German General Staff and Hitler. This, I call it in the book, Operation Mince Pie, was an operation to fool not the enemy, the Russians weren't fooled. This fooled the entire British people and the Allies. And the detail of Dawn Sturgis's death, and I'm sorry to say this because this is a sad case, Dawn Sturgis died according to the toxicology, according to prepared by the inquest doctors, according to the ambulance men on the scene. Dawn Sturgis died of a combination of fentanyl, cocaine in her bloodstream, plus two other drugs, one an anti-anxiety medicine and one a sleep medicine. You put the combination, that combination's a lethal combination for the heart. Everyone in medical profession knows this. It's certain. And that's what killed her. What killed her on June 30th after a party at her house with her friends was that combination. And we now know that she had cocaine, fentanyl, and these other drugs in a lethal cocktail in her bloodstream. And that caused her heart to stop, her brain to be deprived of oxygen, and she was dead on arrival at the hospital, revived artificially and held in a coma until her official death on July 8. But the ability of MI6 and the British government to dress her corpse up as a cause of death through Novichok took more days. She was dead on June 30, 2018, in the Amesbury apartment. The ambulance men, the police, suspected illegal drug dealings in the house, and they continued that story for days because they had evidence of it. Second, they searched the house for drug paraphernalia, and they found it, and the evidence of that is in the testimony of the ambulance men and the police in the public hearing. But they didn't find the alleged Novichok bottle until July 11, 3 days after Dawn Sturgis' official death and 11 days after her real death. And that bottle is the ultimate central clue to the whole entire fabrication. Why? Let me explain very quickly. You have to read the book for the first time to understand it, but you can read the website piece introducing the book to get a glimpse of it. The bottle was allegedly an Nina Ricci perfume in an atomizer. The British claim that this bottle was sprayed on Dawn Sturgis's wrists after she received the bottle as a gift from her boyfriend, a man called Charles Rowley, and she died within 30 minutes. The ambulance was called, and so on. The essential clue to what a lie this was is this: buried under the mass of 6, 7, 8 weeks of hearings and 2 years of preliminary hearings and so forth and so on, is that the man who runs the company in Barcelona, a man called Joseph Vivas, who runs the Spanish company called Puig, P-U-I-G, which owns the perfume and makes the perfume, he has testified that he was shown pictures of the perfume bottle a few days after its discovery, and then he gave a letter explaining what he saw in 2018. He subsequently gave a witness statement to the hearing in November, but he was never called as a witness. Why was he never called as a witness? Because his letters show that he said the perfume that we make is pink in the bottle. The liquid he saw in the bottle as photographed was yellow. But we know, he didn't, the British know, they didn't let on, that Novichok is colorless. And the book explains the evidence from Iran, which synthesized Novichok in 2016, from Korea, Czech Republic, the US and Portendown, all of whom can produce Novichok. Lots of people can produce Novichok, but what's its color? color is a state secret in England, but it's in fact, Novichok is colorless. So you've got a bottle which should have had pink liquid in it that in fact has yellow liquid in it. But either color proves that the bottle that was allegedly the weapon, the central weapon of murder in the entire Skripal Novichok story, did not have colorless Novichok. It had something else. It was made in England. And that's covered up in the hearings because the British put a big black sensorial mark. So when you look at the picture, you can see it on my website, you can see it in the book. When you look at the bottle, it's blacked out. You can't see the color of the liquid. But Mr. Vivas of Puig confirms in his testimony, but not in a question and answer session, that it was yellow. Yellow means the British were lying, and that's central to blowing up their entire narrative. Therefore, the weapon wasn't a Russian Novichok. It was British-made. Second, Yulia Skripal awoke from a coma on March 8, 4 days after the attack, much earlier than ever admitted by the British, the hospital, the courts. And she blinked in response to a series of questions that she had recognized the attacker in the restaurant when she was sprayed, she and her father. That was cut off the communication, as was the doctor and the nurse who witnessed it, as were the policemen who reported it. The blinking episode proves that Yulia Skripal knew that it was not a Russian attack, it was a British attack, and that's been suppressed too. So we have the victim of the crime signaling what she thought happened, but the Skripals were never allowed to testify in any way during these hearings and process. Not allowed to testify from the secrecy of a hideout or in any other fashion. They purportedly had lawyers in the hearing, but those guys said nothing. Their lips were sealed. They were stooges and fakes, bad British fakes as lawyers. So the victim testified to a different line of attack. The crime scene was never reached in any evidence by a Russian. The weapon of the alleged murder turns out to have been a fake. Well, and then what you're left of forensic detail, what's the motive for this crime? Well, the British motive to kill Skripal is far greater than the Russian motive to have done it. So you have no crime scene, no weapon, no victim, no motive. You just have fabrications, of which Dawn Sturgis was the very sad last chapter. And without getting into the detail of it, there isn't a shred of reliable evidence that would meet a British court standard of belief beyond reasonable doubt, or even that's the criminal standard for a crime like this, or the balance of probabilities, which is the civil law standard. There isn't any enough evidence to meet either of those standards. So what this is an extraordinary faking operation in which the entire British and global Anglo media have believed without criticism this fabrication. So the British have been patting themselves on the back as the brilliant deception operators in the world. And they think MI6, the Secret Intelligence Service, thinks that they are far superior to the CIA and the Americans on deception operations. Well, the deception isn't like that. The British intelligence services fooled their own people. And not only the mainstream media, the alternative media has put in a disgraceful performance in exposing this. I'm the last of a group of people who investigated this, associated originally with Rob Slane, a Salisbury resident, and his website called The Blogmire, now unfortunately completely obliterated. You can't get access to it anymore, even through the Wayback Machine. Rob Slane himself, others, including me, started investigating a long time ago. Nowadays, you can't even get the alt media heroes that the folks listening like to read and like to believe. And those people, people like Alexander Mercouris, for example, won't tolerate any competition in the market in which they sell their opinions to any competition of the truth from any other source. So what does all this add up to? It adds up to a phenomenal deception success by the British of their own people. It makes no difference whatsoever to the war in the Ukraine.
Well, and the war, they got their war, and that's for sure. And that's the only thing we can be sure of right now. I didn't realize that Rob Slane, his site had disappeared. Well, John, we'll leave it there. But before we go, how do people order your book? How can they find out all of the details that we've left tantalizingly hidden?
That's the easy part, Chris. Go to Amazon.com. or amazon.co.uk, put in John Helmer, Long Live Novichok. You can do that and order it that way. You can order it as a Kindle, as an ebook, or you can order a paperback delivery out of the United States to Canada. It probably take you 7 days. You can go to the website, johnhelmer.net, go to the story introducing this, and click on the icon for the book, which is on the right side of the homepage, and then you'll get the same sort of order details. And that's how to get at it.
Well, and we got to remember Yulia, Sergei's daughter, who, as far as I know, she wasn't a spy or involved in this, gone missing, and her life totally upended for what 7 years now almost.
It's a very long time, and let's remember, there was tremendous public support for the freedom, for releasing Julian Assange from prison at Belmarsh for under the pressure of U.S. indictments to send him to the U.S. on espionage charges. Assange is released and is alive and well, if entirely retired from his previous journalism activities. But there's no support, none whatever, to recognize that Yulia Skripal is a political prisoner. None whatever. The lawyers for Assange, such champions of free speech and journalism and truth as Robertson and Robinson in London, support the war against Russia. Support the war against Russia. WikiLeaks has contributed nothing whatever in defense of the truth on the Novichok story, neither the Skripal story, the Sturgis story, nor the Navalny story. The Assange story is an important sideline, a milepost long ago past of how the Western media support a deception operation like this. But Assange himself, plus his lawyers and defenders, have done nothing to defend the truth and free Yulia Skripal. If one could, one might try to defend Sergei Skripal. But as I've said, I believe him to be dead. In either event, defend the truth of the Skripal and Novichok story is one step too far for the Assange group. It's too bad, but that's the reality of the world we presently live in.
You can find out more, get John's book, Long Live Novichok. Go to his site, Dances with Bears. Thanks a lot, John, for coming on. I want to thank to Jeremy Kuzmarov over there at covertactionmagazine.com. That's all I got for this time. Until the next time. Thanks again, John.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
People talk about being aware. They'll critique you for dropping some litter or for not washing your hair. And if you talk of launching a revolution, they'll say that you should be killed. You gotta work within the system, they'll say. Yes, reality is such a bitter pill. Here in the Matrix, they say the problems that exist can all be solved by means provided if we politely persist. Work in your offices, vote in your booths. Your nightmares about those creatures, 'cause reality is such a bitter pill. Yes, reality is such a bitter pill.